Hi, welcome to 0 for 1, the newly rebranded podcast from us here at outfieldflyrule.com. My name's Brent. I'm here with Chris.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. And so this used to be the podcast to be named later, and we fulfilled that promise. We have we have named it later. Today is later. But yeah, 0 for 1, I figure, is a good name for the podcast.
We might get a hit later. Who knows?
Yeah, we're OFR. We're OFR. So anyway.
We're also not creative, so we're going with that.
Yeah, that'll be also easy if anybody ever wants to look up the podcast and doesn't know what the hell it's called. They can just look up OFR podcast. This is our first one of the season, and I feel like we are really out of the habit of recording this.
Right. We've actually had, it's been a while, not just the first of the season. It's been a while since we recorded. Just had some real life stuff going on for both of us. And now we finally have a chance to kind of sit down at the same time. And Dylan and Doc have been doing a good job on the Platinum Sombrero. There's always the Nakahoma Nation guys. Andy's been on a few things, and we decided we've been a little lax. So here we are.
I feel like the Braves podcast world has exploded in the last like 2 years. Like, you know, when we started Podcast to Be Named Later, I don't know of how many Braves podcasts there were at the time. I don't think there were many.
I think Talking Chop had theirs, and that's the only one that I regularly remember regularly putting stuff out. And then we started recording. I know that we got a little bit of support from our readers and asked for more, but then, you know, things happened. I got sick. You got married. You know, the Braves, it was hard to talk about a bad team every week. Yeah. They didn't help matters any. And then when we tried to kick it back off, we ran into some technical issues and trying to get everything synced up with our schedules and our technology and whatnot. And hopefully we have all that solved.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, then that means we think it's solved. We're not going to put this out anymore if it's out of sync. I don't know what was causing the sync issues. That was nuts. But it's going smoothly now, it looks like.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, we will definitely see. Okay, so since this is our first podcast of the 2018 season, I thought we could take a look at the season so far. And here we are. How many games into the season? We are 20 games into the season. The Braves are 12-8. What has been your impression of the season so far, just from an overall, like, are you pleasantly surprised? Is this more or less in line with what you expected, or maybe without going to player by player just yet, but like just overall, what's your impression of this team versus 20 games ago?
Well, you know, a 12-8 team, that's a 600 winning percentage, I believe that works out to, which that's a 97 win team. And if you would have told me coming into the season, hey, the Braves are a 97 win team, I would have laughed at you. I don't think that they're going to maintain that for the entire year, obviously, because there's some players who are doing things now that they just can't maintain for the whole year. And then there's other players that we should probably see here in a few weeks that aren't here yet that might offset some of that. Mm-hmm. But for me, the biggest difference for me is this has just been a fun team to watch so far this year.
It has.
Whether it be the last minute comebacks, whether it be the guys leading, you know, trailing after 7 and then going in the inning 7, 8, and 9 and battling it out and getting some wins. Say what you will about Brian Snitker, and I've had my fair share of criticisms of him over the years. But since he has taken over for the Braves, no team has won more games in their last at-bats than the Braves have. He, for whatever it is, this team just fights and fights and fights, and it is a fun team to watch. That game on Saturday with the ender drag bunt to end the game, the squeeze bunt, that was just craziness. I was happy.
So yeah, I guess a pessimist could take that, and I'm not a pessimist, but a pessimist could take that as saying like we haven't won a ton of games since Snitker's been manager, and then when you add that in, then that's a pessimist could suggest that. Boy, we are really close to being – we're like however many walk-off wins away from being really bad. But
right.
But I don't mind it. I think it's fun. I love having games that are always exciting in the late innings.
Right. I don't, for me, I don't want to make the exact comparison to 1991, but it feels like that. You've got a mixture of young and old. Everybody's out there trying to feel their way, and it's just fun watching them do their thing. They're not going to win every game, and some games are going to be ugly, and some games are going to be, you know, quick and easy, but it's fun right now, and we haven't been able to say that about this team in a few years now.
This team is definitely fun. Well, let's get into actually, before we do, we should make note, we were talking about this before we hit record, but the Braves aren't just beating up on the dregs of the division, although...
Well, I mean, we did beat Washington.
That's true. Washington is, I assume, fourth place. The Marlins have to be in fifth, right?
Marlins are not good. Washington is bad. The Marlins are just awful.
The Marlins are actually going to help every team in the East beat their win projection this year.
But you know what? It's fine because the Marlins got in bed with Jeffrey Loria, and he destroyed that team, that franchise, and I have no qualms about saying I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a little concerned when he sold the team to the new ownership group, but I'm no longer really concerned about that because that team, exactly. That ownership group seems as dysfunctional as Loria ever was. Like, they might be a little more committed down the road to winning, but they have bungled the hell out of the first year of that ownership. It is just a comedy of errors in Miami these days. So that's nice to have in the division. So
their board meetings need a Benny Hill theme to it. That's about what it's like down there.
Yeah. But no, we're beating on the Braves have played pretty well against the Phillies, who have been one of baseball's kind of surprise teams so far. You mentioned that we're on pace for 97 wins, regardless of whether we'll stick to that pace or not, but we're only in third place. The East has just been a top heavy division so far this year. The Mets have been great. The Phillies have been very good. Just not when they're on your TV, Braves fans. And then of course there's Washington who's not going away. Washington's the one team in the division that could afford to have a bad, a slow April and still have some playoff chances.
Yeah, with Scherzer and Strasburg leading the way for those two, there's a very good chance that will settle down very quickly. It's just hard to keep those two guys consistently, not performing well. And at some point, those guys are going to remember who they are, or teams, baseball's cyclical. It's going to be ups and downs. And right now they're down. And I think with the talent that team has, they should level out. Will they win the division? Is it enough to win the division? I don't know. I think, they're definitely going to be in a wild card hunt.
No. In fact, if I had to pick a team to win the division, I'm probably still picking Washington. New York, I'm interested in New York, but I don't know. I don't know if that team has what it takes to survive the midsummer fade, which I feel like a lot of hot start teams always succumb to. All right, let's talk Braves players. Let's talk the reasons this season has been fun. So what stands out to you for your most fun player this year?
Probably a couple of things. One, Ozzie Albies is fun to watch. He's just it's just fun watching him run the bases and, get that top speed right out of the gate. He's hitting for a little bit more power for home runs than I expected. But, somebody like Andy was talking about how he had changed his swing plane a little bit. He had put on a little bit more muscle. The guy was just crazy workouts, had just crazy workouts during the off season. So I think people kind of, under me being one of them, underestimated his power potential based on, his size. Somebody said last year that Ozzie was a 10 to 15 home run guy. And I kind of, no way, not that. But yeah, he's turned out to look like that's going to be the case.
Well, yeah, and then you think back to when he was a prospect, when he was a prospect that was catching everybody's attention in like Double A. The debates were like some scouts thought he might be like a 0 to 6 home run player, and other scouts thought, oh, he might hit double digits, and then some were saying like maybe in his best years he might even touch 15 homers. He's on pace for like 36 home runs right now, which is. I don't expect him to keep that pace, but that is nuts.
Right.
Like he's already halfway. He's got 6 home runs right now. That's basically halfway to what even the most optimistic scouts thought would be his best season.
And we're so, 3 weeks in.
Yeah, and he's 21 years old. And so it's nuts. And what's also funny is that he's doing all this. He has 9 doubles. He has 16 extra base hits. He has 1 stolen base and 2 caught stealings. Like we thought he was going to be this like 60 stolen base, you know, maybe 5 to 10 homers type player because of his speed. And because I think, like you said, it's partially tied into the way he looks, like the way he plays.
Part of that stolen base total being low for him is he's always starting from second base. Ozzie Albies has 16 extra base hits, which right now is currently the most in Major League Baseball. So when he's not rounding the bases, he's stopping halfway through, which makes it harder or makes it less. There's less incentive to steal bases when he's sitting on second base and you know, Freddie Freeman come up to bat. So part of that is just, I think, contextual in terms of how the game has been developing. You know, he gets on second base and Freddie Freeman comes up to bat. There's no one. Freeman's going to drive him in if he gets a hit. Mm-hmm. He's going to score from second. There's no need to try and extend that to third base. But yeah, Ozzie Albies has been fun to watch. Dansby Swanson has been fun to watch this year too. There was a lot of people who were ready to give up on Swanson last year. And, you know, he had a bad year. There's no doubt about it. The first 6 weeks of the year, he just had horrid, horrid, horrid luck. He was hitting the ball hard, but he was hitting it right at people. But after that, he started getting some bad habits, which led to, you know, decreased exit velocity, chasing pitches that he shouldn't have been chasing, things like that. I think he just got totally overwhelmed last year with everything going the way it did. You know, he's a guy who's never really had to struggle.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, you know, I think we noticed that last year, which was, you know, at the beginning of the year, you and I were both beating the drum for like, don't worry about Dansby. He's hitting the ball hard. He's just hitting it right at guys right now, and that's going to be fine. But ultimately, I think you're right. I think the constant failure affected him in a way. And you know, he's human. He's naturally, you keep doing the same thing, you have bad results. You're going to start thinking subconsciously, at least, that your process isn't right, and it can make a player desperate to try to do something different. And by midsummer, he really was a kind of a broken player. But, you know, he went back to AAA, caught his breath. He was only there for like a week and a half, 2 weeks. It wasn't long before Camargo's injury necessitated him to come back. And then, you know, after he came back, he wasn't on fire. He wasn't as good a hitter as he has been this year. But he was a league average shortstop offensively, or maybe even better. He actually may have been. It's been a while since I've looked at those numbers.
I think he was better than other shortstops. He wasn't league average, but he had been better than other shortstops.
Yeah, he was a league average hitter, not shortstop. He was a league average hitter. So, and at shortstop, that's a really good thing to have. I think his WRC plus after his return last year was 100. He was a good ball player down the stretch. But the thing is, when you're looking at those season stats, when you're watching the game every night, that those first couple months of the year are going to overwhelm anything good. He's only going to be able to make small dents in that at the end of the season. So I don't think right. Braves fans, it's easy to underestimate just how good he was at the end of last season, to the point where a lot of Braves fans were wanting him to start the year in the minors this year.
Right. Ugh. And he, you know, people forget too that he really has not had a lot of seasoning, had not had a lot of experience. He was called up. You can argue whether he was called up too early based on just trying to sell tickets or what have you. I think there's probably some legitimate claims to that, you know, that he was called up before he was really ready, just so that the Braves could afford to. Basically, they were throwing a bone to the fans in a bad season. Hey, come check out the new guy. Make him the face of the franchise, this and that and the other. Whether that was the right decision or not, you know, you can always go back and second guess everything. But he came up. He tried. He did well. The thing is he did well when he was up here in 2016, and that seems to be forgotten on a lot of people who were calling for him to start the season in AAA. He hit major league pitching before, so it's not a matter of can he hit major league pitching. It was just, you know, they were adjusting and he wasn't. Now, one thing to be said about Swanson so far this year that is very similar to his 2016 is he has an amazing BABIP this year. He's .439 with batting average on balls in play. that's going to come down. He's not going to hit 342 for the rest of the year. But I think what we're seeing right now is closer to the actual Swanson than what we were seeing last year. He's not going to keep doing this. He's not walking as much as he had in the year or in the 18 months previous. He's only at a 6% walk rate now, where he had been higher than that in years before. But you know what? Take it while it's there. You know, these runs count. These games count just as much now as games in September do. The only reason the ones in September seem to be a little bit more valuable is because you don't have time to make them up. But a season can be won or lost in April as well. So take these W's while you can get them.
Absolutely. I've got another guy who's made this season fun for me. It's actually a pair of guys, and they are Ryan Flaherty and Preston Tucker.
Ah, the unnamed duo.
Yes. I mean, Preston Tucker is kind of settling into what I thought he might be, which is a guy who just pops a home run every few days and isn't necessarily that great of a ball player. You look at his stat line and it's already kind of come back to earth to the point where he's barely OBPing 300. He's got a 475 slugging percentage though. And he's something. He's maybe not quite as good as Matt Kemp, but he's a hell of a lot cheaper, and I like him a whole lot more.
Yeah, he can't. He's not going to be able to sustain this. His walk rate is just 4.5%. He's way low on taking walks. So right now he's kind of a function of hits getting through that probably aren't going to get through in the long run. He's also, I'm looking at this, I think he's feasting on right-handed batters. He doesn't face that many left-handers, does he? No, he's at a 519 slugging versus right-handed batters this year, 321 OBP. So he's doing fine in platoon splits, and that may be something to work with when you know, some of the future moves come down. If he remains on the team, you know, maybe he's that guy that you come in a platoon advantage situation.
Oh, yeah. And then
Flaherty.
What the hell is this?
Talk about out of nowhere. Just completely out of left field, except maybe out of third base. Out of short left field.
He's slashing 362, 471, 500 with 11 walks. He's got more walks than I think anybody on the team that's not other than Freddie and Markakis.
And he's actually walking more frequently than Markakis. His walk rate is 15.7%. Markakis' walk rate is 13%. So he's actually walking more frequently, even though he doesn't have as many walks.
His rookie season was in 2012. He batted, he played in 77 games that year, batted 167 times. He already has almost double the amount of walks that he had as a rookie. He walked 6 times in 77 games as a rookie in 2012.
Oof. With some of the upcoming moves too, you know, Jose Bautista was recently signed to a minor league contract to play third base for the minor league Braves. That suddenly puts Flaherty in a position where people are asking, okay, what do you do with him? How can you platoon or sit, you know, what is effectively the NL's leading batter? You know, this is one of those situations where Brian Snitker has to make some decisions on who's playing, who's not playing, and you know, better him than me, because it's easy for me to sit here and second guess and say things. He's the one that has to make the decisions that affect the games. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays up if Bautista actually makes it up to the big league club.
Yeah, and then finally, I will mention Kurt Suzuki as someone who's made this season very enjoyable for me, because after losing Tyler Flowers on day one, I was already starting to think that this season was just going to be impossible. Like, we had so much optimism, and then we had Flowers get hurt, and then just like 2 weeks into the season, Freddie Freeman took one on the wrist, and we all thought that here this is again, you know, like here's this same old nonsense. And, but no, Freeman survived, and Kurt Suzuki stepped in and has had an amazing 3 weeks.
It's April 23rd, and then the Braves have had 4 separate catchers take a plate appearance already this year.
Yeah.
Of course, one of those went down in his very first plate appearance, but still. Yeah, I thought losing Flowers was going to be a big deal because, you know, his bat has been very good. It's been a little bit BABIP-aided for the last couple of years, but his bat has been very good. But what you lose with Flowers is the ability to steal strikes on the corners. you know, get those borderline calls. He steals more outs than any player in baseball. And that's something that I think a guy like Newcomb could benefit from. A guy who tries to nibble the corners a little bit too much. Flowers is a guy that could help him out. But Suzuki has been great in his own right. He's hitting .326, got a .411 on base percentage. I mean, he's just killing the ball right now. And he's played good defense. At worst, adequate defense. Had a great play the other night to lay out and get a player at the plate from the Mets. I think it was Wilmer Flores laid out, took a bad throw. Did a little Superman dive, got him at the plate to save a run. Been real happy with the way Suzuki's played.
Oh, yeah. I haven't looked at his framing stats this year, but last year he was pretty good at framing, I want to say.
Suzuki was?
Yeah.
I haven't looked at his.
I mean, nobody is.
I know he, coming into Atlanta, he had traditionally not been a very good framer.
Right, but I think last year he kind of blossomed in that regard. So, yeah, I've been very, very happy with him this season.
Freddie Freeman has been Freeman. I'm looking right now, and Freddie Freeman has a .939 OPS, a .446 on base percentage. He's hitting .296, and there are people complaining. This is very similar to a couple of years ago. People are complaining that this is not the Freddie of old, that he's still hurt, his wrist is hurt, that he should have taken time off. Now, it's possible that his wrist is hurt. He did get plunked on the wrist for about the 15th season in a row, but I really think sometimes people have some unreal expectations. He's got a .939 OPS, .446 on base percentage, and they're saying this isn't the Freddie of old. This is just if you're complaining about the way Freddie Freeman has played this year, you don't deserve to have this team. I'm sorry. You don't deserve to have him as a player on the team. Just move on and become a Mets fan.
I completely agree. In fact, it reminds me of Falcons fans with Matt Ryan. Like, that is, fans after the playoffs ended last season kept hearing from Falcons fans, it's time for the team to move on from Matt Ryan. I'm like, I think you're the reason 28-3 happened. You're the reason that the whatever the karma is or higher powers in the universe that you want to believe in stepped in the moment we were up 28-3 in the Super Bowl, and they shifted everything in that game because all these Falcons fans want to give up on Matt Ryan so easily. Nobody's happy with what they've got. We've got superstars in Atlanta in sports, and Freddie Freeman is a superstar. He's one of the best players in the game. So shame on you if you don't enjoy that.
Absolutely. And then, of course, we've got Ender Inciarte doing Ender things. You've got Nick Markakis, who, I see a lot of people saying we should trade Markakis. He needs to be benched when Acuna comes up, this and that and the other. You can argue whether you're getting traditional right field production out of Nick Markakis. You can argue whether he has the defensive chops of some of the guys who might be alternatives on this team. There is one thing that Nick Markakis does well, and he gets on base. And that's the quickest way and the most what's the word I'm looking for? That's the highest correlation to scoring runs in baseball. It's getting on base.
Yes.
And he does that as well as anybody in this team, on this team, with the exception of Freeman. And he may not hit, 20 home runs. He may not play all-star level defense anymore. One thing I have noticed is his defense this year, and there was an article about this a few days ago, where the Braves are using positioning. They actually have cards in their back pockets now, I believe, where there are scouting reports giving them positioning ideas on certain players. And Markakis seems to have been a guy who, I think it was Grant McCauley, as a matter of fact, who mentioned that. Markakis seems to be a guy who seems to be taking advantage of the new data regarding positioning and putting himself in a better position to make some plays, even though he may not have the range that he used to.
Well, that makes positioning really important for him then, because he doesn't have that range. He is one of the – Baseball Savant has the numbers for foot speed, and I looked at it the other day. Kurt Suzuki is faster sprint speed on the base paths than Nick Markakis this year. And so when you're basically at catcher speed in right field, then positioning and instincts do matter. And I think he has great instincts, and I think he's pretty good at positioning himself for batters.
And he's good at reading the bat off the ball. He's not going to generally get beat with a ball tailing away from him or anything like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, Markakis is not your ideal right fielder, but we could do a lot worse than having him out there and having that 370. To me, that's the big thing. That 370 on base percentage, I mean, that's roughly that's probably a little bit high for him over what he's had here in Atlanta. But, you know, 360 on base percentage for 4 years, that's a good thing to have.
Now, I definitely don't think it should be Markakis who goes to the bench when Acuña comes. I think it should be Preston Tucker. But Markakis, let me ask you this, though. When it comes to people saying we should trade Markakis, with this team where it's at, which is, I guess now's a fine time to at least segue a bit into our playoff odds, which Fangraphs has us at like 8.4% to make the playoffs, which sounds small, but it's really not. I mean, it's a 1 in 12 shot for a third place team. That's not that bad. So let me ask, if somebody offers to take on Markakis's contract, for which is what, $11 million for this season, and that's the end of it.
Right.
Do you make that trade? Like, I don't support trading him just to get him out of the lineup. I think that's a terrible idea, but to give yourself some financial flexibility to make maybe another move to shore up the bullpen if need be?
I think you make any trade that makes your team better or that you feel makes your team better. Mm-hmm. With Markakis, the odds are that we're not going to sign him to an extension. So we probably have him through the end of 2018, which means unless we think 2018 is going to be a playoff year, then keeping him doesn't make this team more likely to make the playoffs. Let's put it that way. Whereas there might be other teams out there who are willing to have a veteran left-handed bat who has experience and, you know, is good at getting on base. That might be worth something. And it might be worth a bullpen piece that pays off for us down the road. But I'm always a fan of I see nobody as untouchable. Acuña, Freeman, nobody to me is untouchable, provided the return you get makes your team better. Now, that's going to be a tough sell with a guy like Freeman or Acuña. Mm-hmm. So obviously the return has to be of Troutian levels in that regard. But I think anytime you have an opportunity to make your team better, you should consider it. That doesn't mean you need to do it, because despite making the team better, public relations plays into it as well. And for a team like Atlanta that seems to be coming out of a rebuild to start dropping players like Markakis in a season where they're being competitive, that could have a negative effect on future years in terms of the public relations. You know, fans stop coming to games. That means less money, less revenue, less chance to go out and go after other players. So you have to weigh the options, but I'm not one who thinks that Markakis should be traded. But at the same time, if somebody comes to us with an offer that makes our team better, do it.
I don't think we're going to get an offer that makes the 2018 team better, an offer for Markakis. But at the same time, I would certainly consider it, because I think trading Markakis it gives you a whole lot more flexibility to fix other problems if they come up. So I think that would be an interesting dilemma. I don't know if it's one that's going to necessarily present itself. I don't think there's a huge market for Markakis. So I don't really think I don't think Anthopoulos's phone is ringing off the hook with offers for Nick Markakis at the moment, but
not in April or May, but, you know, start getting late June, mid July. I think Markakis is going to be a guy who's targeted, but again, I don't think you do a deal just to do a deal. He's not going to make, you know, trading Markakis, like you said, is not going to make the 2018 team better, but it could bring in a player that makes the 19 or 20 teams better. Especially in the bullpen, you're not going to get a whole lot for Markakis, I don't believe, simply because of age, expiring contract. You're only getting 6 months of, or, you know, half a season of use out of him. But, you know, you might get back that piece in the bullpen that's just enough to bridge you from the, you know, the sixth inning starter up to the mentor, Vizcaino, back into the bullpen. You might be able to find a guy who's a good setup guy. One thing this team, I think, could use is a ground ball pitcher, other than Moylan. Moylan's not going to be here next year. But I think with the way that the SunTrust Park has shown to play so far, I don't think a high ground ball pitcher would be a bad thing to have.
Right. Hey, I got a fun stat for you. There is one player in Major League Baseball, and this is with, like, minimum at-bats at zero. So like literally only one player in Major League Baseball this year has a 300 batting average, 300 or higher batting average, and more home runs than strikeouts at the plate. Do you know who that is?
More home runs than strikeouts. Yes.
And a 300 batting average.
Only because we were talking about it earlier, I might say Kurt Suzuki.
It's Kurt Suzuki.
Because I don't remember him striking out a whole lot.
He has struck out twice, and he has three homers.
Ah, well, there we go.
Yeah.
That's
There are only three players who have more home runs than strikeouts. One is Ian Kinsler has one home run and zero strikeouts, who's been hurt most of the season. And then Jose Ramirez, who like came on out of
the pitcher,
the Indians.
We DFA'd him.
No, wait.
Yeah, the Indians Ramirez. Yeah.
He is also Jose Ramirez, right? Now I'm very concerned.
Yes, the Indians have Jose Ramirez,
who like 56 doubles last year, came out of nowhere.
That guy is crazy. He's crazy underrated.
Yeah, he's got seven homers and six strikeouts this season, which is phenomenal. So the offense has been definitely a pleasant surprise for the Braves, just all over the board. What about the pitching so far this year?
We've had some. The starters kind of started off rough. They have now the starters have really gotten into a groove. Over the last 15 games, the Braves rotation has a 1.97 ERA, and that's across 87 innings. Mm-hmm. And they have 9.8 strikeouts per nine innings over the last 15 games. So the starters, they haven't been going deep into games, but they've been getting the job done recently. I think part of that not going in deep into games is – a decision. I think it's a little bit of the analytics side from Alex Anthopoulos coming in. Snitker has at times let pitchers he has pulled pitchers early in the past. But I think what we're seeing now is guys, even when they're doing well, when it's coming up on that third time in the order, it doesn't matter if the pitcher's pitching well, he's going to the bullpen. And I think that's coming from some of the data that's being given to him from the front office. I don't necessarily think that if Snitker was completely making the decisions himself, and I'm not saying that it's Anthopoulos making decision. I think it's the two of them working together and saying, hey, the third time through the order, usually a guy gets pummeled. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead and pull him out, keep him fresh, and go on into the bullpen. So the pitching, the starting pitching has been doing well. I think that they have really settled down. Mike Foltynewicz is looking really good over his last several starts. He's got a 2.53 ERA on the season. Brandon McCarthy is looking like the Charlie Lee Brandt from 1991. 2.91 ERA over his four starts. The team's kind of even Tehran has really seemed to settle down a little bit. A lot of chatter that I've seen. I haven't read anything on it specifically, but it seems that Anibal Sanchez has had a little bit of an influence on Julio Tehran and his approach and some of the things he's doing. So maybe that veteran signing is really what that team needed. And Sanchez, I mean, he's only had two starts, but he's at a 1.29 ERA. Mm-hmm. Sean Newcomb, 3.74. Tehran is down to a 4.0 ERA. I mean, all five of our starters are at 4.0 or below, and that's hard to say for a lot of teams. And that's definitely not something you could say about the Braves team for the last couple of years.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, starting pitching has been a real issue in recent seasons. But yeah, I don't know. I'm encouraged so far by what I've seen. Of course, then, you know, it always comes down to, can you keep Brandon McCarthy healthy? Can guys like Newcomb and Folty consistently or just hold on to the improvements they make? Because, you know, Folty is a guy who he can tantalize you for like 2 months and he can make you think he's turned that corner. He's done it a handful of times. And then somehow you just look up and on October 1st, his ERA is 4.4. I really want to see if Folty has turned a corner in that regard. So I think we need a little bit more of the season to maybe tell, but I'm encouraged so far by what I've seen.
It's early, but I do believe, I haven't seen all of his starts, but I do believe that Folty is doing a better job of controlling himself and keeping his composure on the mound. In years past, when he fell behind a batter or when a pitch didn't get the call that he thought it should get, he would sort of go into crybaby mode. He would kind of, you know, let his emotions get the best of him, and then he would go off the rails. This year, he seems to have controlled that better, even in games where the calls have not gone his way. Some of the pitches have been good pitches that he didn't get the strike for, things like that. He's still maintained his composure and gone out there and done what he needs to do. So for me, this has been a good positive turn this year for Folty that I kind of was unsure where he was going to be. Was he going to be that guy who was always going to be your fourth starter because he couldn't ever turn himself into, you know, being better than that? And mm-hmm. I think he's done that this year. He's maintained his composure.
Yeah, one stat that I really like out of Newcomb and Folty so far is a combined 4 home runs allowed, 2 by each. That's what I thought would be the issues for both in this park and in general. They've both been quite good. Newcomb is still struggling with walks a little bit, but
and he's doing that. That's what's crazy. That's what just kind of drives me nuts about Newcomb is he gets ahead of guys early and then nibbles around and misses, and then that's how he gives up a lot of those walks. Is instead of putting a guy away, it seems like he gets to him early with that curveball and that fastball, gets the 2 strikes on him, and then it's a, you know, curveball outside, you know, fastball inside, you know, he's all around the plate. It's like, dude, you have one of the better curveballs that I've seen in the major leagues. Throw it, use it, get a strike, get this guy out of here. Trust your stuff. You're here for a reason. Trust your stuff.
Mm-hmm. Our bullpen, this has been an interesting bullpen to discuss because the amount of Tums and Rolaids Braves fans have had to intake this season over the last 3 weeks because of this bullpen is insane. And yet at the same time, you look at these ERAs, Aroldis Vizcaino, 1.86, Shane Carl, 1.20, Dan Winkler, 1.74, AJ Minner, 0.87, Sam Freeman, 2.89, Peter Moylan, 0. I think there's no greater example of how ERAs can be misleading than Peter Moylan currently sporting a 0.
Let me flip side some of that. Jose Ramirez, 17.05. Josh Raven, 6.00. Luke Jackson, 13.50. Lucas Sims, 81. Rex Brothers has an infinity ERA.
Yeah, luckily we didn't let those guys pitch too much, so that's good.
But yeah, our ERA for most of the season so far had been pretty good in the bullpen, but it was misleading because we were walking guys like crazy. We are currently walking 6.67 batters per 9 innings right now, and that's number one by a long shot. That's, you know, time and a half more than the next closest team, which I think is actually the Cincinnati Reds, who we'll be facing later on today if the skies clear up. And that basically means that this is going to be a long game with a lot of free base runners. But yeah, our bullpen has not been good at all this year in terms of limiting the number of runners on base. And that's really starting to catch up to him. I do think that Shane Carl has been a great, great bright spot so far this year.
Love that guy.
Dan Winkler has pitched really well. Mentors look good. Freeman mm-hmm. has done well in the few times that he's been out there. Aroldis Vizcaino is kind of hit and miss sometimes. But I think that if they can stick with that core of 5, you know, it might work out. Although Aroldis, 6.5 walks per 9. Mentor, 6.1 walks per 9. Sam Freeman, 7.7 walks per 9. So all of these guys, at least Vizcaino and Winkler, can offset some of that with some very high strikeout rates. You know, 10.2 per 9 for Vizcaino, 13.9 for Winkler. But we've got to control the walks in the bullpen. That's one of the reasons we're having to come from behind so much is it's a 0-0 game through 6. You know, the starters do well, and then the guy coming in for inning number 6 or 7 gives up some walks and one hit. It only takes – you put that many base runners on, and it only takes one hit to get behind fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Sequencing has been bad, and results have been bad.
I do think that Vizcaino will get his walks under control a bit. I think Mentor will do the same. Freeman he's always been a walker, But 7.7 walks, I also think that's a little out of line for him. So I think, or 7.7 per nine, I think Freeman will do better. Although I think he'll still be a guy who struggles with walks some. Although Freeman has gotten us out of a lot of jams. A lot of his walks might just be from pitching so much. He's pitched in 13 games this year.
Everyday Sam Freeman.
Yeah. 65% of our games feature Sam Freeman. And that is when you're pitching almost 2/3 of the games for your team, it's going to be hard to maintain a semblance of control because that guy must be exhausted. And that's the one thing that concerns me about the team is that this bullpen is there's a lot of work going in. And so I don't know if I don't know what this thing's going to look like in July.
I don't know what this thing's going to look like Friday.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move along. So needless to say, we've been pretty encouraged by the start of the season so far, and the Braves have playoff odds of around 8%. So a 1-in-12 shot of making the playoffs is pretty good. We've had a few recent transactions. So, really, the only ones I want to hit on are two rehabs and a minor league free agent signing. So let's talk rehab first. Tyler Flowers has started a rehab assignment. I think we will welcome Flowers back onto the roster with open arms because of we've got no production at catcher besides Kurt Suzuki this year. So
right. Well, yeah, Tyler Flowers is going to come back, and I think they'll roll back into what they had last year. Maybe it's more of a 50-50. Rather than the 60-40-ish it was last year.
Yeah.
Flowers, you know, he's going to, if nothing else, he'll play a few games as soon as he comes back just to get himself back into playing shape and to give Suzuki a little bit of a rest. But, yeah, I don't think we'll have any problem welcoming him back.
Yeah, I kind of see that the same way. Luis Gohara is also on a rehab assignment. And that's a guy that in the offseason, I think a lot of people had penciled into the starting five for this staff. Do you think there's a place for him in the current rotation? And if so, who's the odd man out? I mean, I suppose Anibal Sanchez, who's on the DL. So it's really Matt Whistler would be the odd man out if Gohara returns.
Well, right. If Sanchez were healthy, I would think Whistler would go down, Sanchez to the bullpen, and Gohara to the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
If Sanchez, you know, he's got the hamstring injury, and those are notoriously vague in terms of when you can come back from them and whatnot. So if Anibal Sanchez is ready to come back and ready to go into the rotation, I think you could have a scenario where Gohara just stays down for right now and gets a few weeks down, and suddenly we have extra control over Gohara for an extra year, similar to what Acuna did. I'm not saying the Braves are going to play that game, but I think Gohara would be an upgrade to Sanchez in the rotation, but Sanchez has been playing well, and I think that they do like the Sanchez presence there in the bullpen. Like I said earlier, he's apparently had some good influence on Tehran, and they might want to keep him in the rotation, or at least in the bullpen for that. But right off the cuff, Whistler's the odd man out.
Obviously. Yeah, I would agree. I think Sanchez and Whistler both I really like the idea of having Anibal Sanchez in this bullpen, especially when the bullpen is this overworked in general. Having a guy who can go two innings, maybe three innings every third, fourth day is really valuable to a team that works its bullpen like this. And I kind of wouldn't mind it when Gohara's ready. If Sanchez is still out, I wouldn't mind letting Matt Whistler take a shot at the same role, that role of a long reliever, maybe a guy who
swing
a guy
man.
You
every team
yeah
swing
a guy
man.
You can't call on necessarily every day, but you can he can pitch, he can give you 2-3 innings, which when you're up 10-0 in the seventh inning, as the Braves seem to be. Like once a week these days, which is weird. Or if you're down 10-0 in the seventh inning, you need one guy to just come in and finish the game. And that would be so helpful for Winkler, Minter, Freeman, Moylan, Vizcaino to just take a night off and just have one guy who just comes in, and your job is just don't give up seven runs, you know?
And that's one thing that gets overlooked about this. You know, we have these guys. We were talking about Freeman, 13 appearances. Vizcaino has 10. Carl has 10. Winkler has 10. It's not just the in-game appearances. It's the risk you run of wearing a guy out simply by getting him up and warming him up. He may never come into the game, but if you have to stand him up and warm him up and he has to throw those warm-up pitches and kind of get into, you know, game mode, that's just almost as bad as putting him into the game if you do that one or two times in a row, you know, a couple of games in a row. So having a guy you can come in and pitch two or three innings and get you through a 10-0, whether it be, you know, a positive or negative 10-0, and just get you out of it without having to even warm up the other guys is a good thing. I think a lot of times we overlook the fact that a guy may have only pitched one or two days in a row, but he's warmed up 4 days in a row. And that has a wear and tear effect on the arm as well.
Yeah. And Whistler, you know, his start the other night, I think I read that he heavily relied on two pitches. So I think that would fit really nicely in a bullpen. You know, just who knows? Maybe with Whistler, you just never can know what to believe.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think we tried that with him last year, and I don't know how it worked out. But, you know, maybe if he knows what his role is a little bit better, he can prepare for it. I would imagine that he's the guy sent down when Gohara is ready to come back up.
I think you're probably right. I just would personally prefer to send down somebody like Sokolovich instead, or one of these guys who are kind of a 1-2 inning burst type player. But anyway,
right.
So the third transaction is probably the most interesting one. The Braves have signed Jose Bautista, Joey Bats, to a minor league contract. He's made his minor league debut. He's working his way through the system. I believe he's now in Gwinnett, right?
He was promoted to Gwinnett today.
All right.
So he's going to play, I believe, reading Mark Bowman was saying that he was going to play a doubleheader in Gwinnett and then could join the Braves as recently or as soon as this weekend.
So let's talk, first off, let's presuppose for a second that Jose Bautista still has something to offer with the bat. Like, because this question is only interesting if that's the case. Like, if Joey Bat sucks, well, it's a very easy solution. You just DFA him and move on. But if he is still a realistic but optimistic form of himself. So let's say he's the 240 hitter or whatever that we expect him to be, but he still has power and he can play. Let's also say that Ronald Acuña comes up in the next month. What do you think the bench looks like?
I won't even begin to speculate. I'm surprised, one, that Bautista was signed. Two, I'm surprised he was signed to play third base since he hasn't played it in years. I mean, he has a game or two there over the last, I think last year or the year before. But
yeah,
He hasn't played third base regularly in a decade, I think. He's going to a defensively important position like third base after showing that he can't play a much less strenuous defensive position like right field. Mm-hmm. And that kind of flies in the face of some of the things Anthopoulos said during the offseason about wanting to improve the defense. I do think that Bautista brings what Matt Kemp brought, which is name value, name recognition, mm-hmm. which is a good thing for PR purposes and selling tickets. And it's also a good thing when you have a pitcher up there who's looking and he's pitching to Freddie Freeman and suddenly he sees Jose Bautista standing on deck circle. Now, you and I both know this is not the Jose Bautista from 2010, but it's Jose Bautista. Right. And that's a guy who has shown he can hit major league pitching pretty well at times. So there is some benefit there.
Yeah, and you know, you've got we're going to need a DH a few times this year. So the reason I brought this up is, let's say everybody's healthy on this team, and that includes Johan Camargo. I have a thought, and my thought is that I think this is one of the few National League teams that can afford to carry a guy like Jose Bautista on its bench purely for offensive and occasional DH purposes. And the reason is that I think we need one utility infielder, which I think Ryan Flaherty can be that guy. Well, basically, we've got three shortstops starting every day on this team. Johan Camargo, Dansby Swanson, Ozzie Albies.
Right.
I wouldn't want to mess with Albies. I want to just let him play second. But at the same time, if an emergency happens, he can slide to short if you need him to. But Ryan Flaherty, I won't say that he can play short well, but he can play short. He's played short regularly or semi-regularly as recently as like 2016, I think, 2015. And so I think having Flaherty as the super utility guy, but also having a super utility guy in Camargo that's starting every day, gives you kind of some inherent flexibility that can let you justify keeping a guy like Joey Batts on the bench, which is not it's not the norm in the National League.
Right. I'm not sure how much he has left. I know he hit 23 home runs last year, but I'm also a fan of context matters. And there were 114 players that hit 20 or more home runs last year, and Joey Batts ranked 85th out of those 114. So the power that he brings is fairly available now. And, you know, so I'm not sure what kind of benefit that'll have. It's all speculation at this point. I mean, you look back and the guy has been good as recently as 2015, but then it seemed to take a nosedive in what, 17 was really the nosedive year. But I think he has the ability. He has seen other positions. He has seen third base. He has seen first base a couple of times. He's seen the corner outfield. I guess if you had to insert him into a 13-inning game, you could put him in there somewhere.
Well, I guess for me, though, it just comes down to, like, what is Charlie Culberson bringing to the team? Really? Like, I don't know.
Options? I mean.
Yeah, but they all involve playing Charlie Culberson. That's the downside.
No, I mean options, like he can go down, maybe. I don't know. I think Culberson's probably on a short leash. You know, there's guys out there who we could probably do without. I mean, for that matter, Flaherty, Tucker, Culberson, Borjos. I think Peter Borjos is one that, you know, when Lane Adams got DFA'd, it was basically a toss-up between him and Peter Borjos. But, you know, Culberson, he's not hitting. He could play several positions, but if you've got Camargo coming back, that's basically a duplication of effort right there. And we saw how bad this team was when they tried to field a bench of entirely utility players. It just wasn't that good with Emilio Bonifacio and all of the guys who, you know, Chase Darnold, guys who could play three or four positions. Hey, we got versatility. Great.
Right.
Where's the talent?
Yeah. I don't know. And like I said, if Joey Batts sucks and last year is the permanent Jose Bautista, and there's a likelihood it is. Like, it is unlikely that he reverses course and is even the player of 2 years ago again. But, you know, on a minor league contract, we can at least find out, and it won't really cost us much. But I think if he is useful as a major league player again, even if it's in a somewhat limited role, I think the team could justify giving Culberson's roster spot to Bautista due to all that versatility that's just present.
I also wonder if it's a hedge against what might happen later in the year. In several of the interviews that Alex Anthopoulos has done when speaking about Bautista, he mentions how professional he is, how he's the guy that players should look towards when how to play the game. He's, you know, veteran presence, setting the example, how hard he works, how to carry yourself as a major leaguer. He's basically describing Nick Markakis. So I'm wondering if he's hedging against the fact that maybe he knows that Markakis might not be there later in the year, or for that matter, do you just play Bautista enough to build him up and then send him to an AL team with a DH?
That's possible too. I've definitely heard a lot about Bautista's locker room presence. I know Anthopoulos specifically credits Bautista with teaching or kind of showing Edwin Encarnacion how to be a better ball player. And so I think the effect that he could have on young Latin stars on this team is interesting. So I think it wouldn't surprise me if they want him in the locker room when Ronald Acuña walks into it.
My only concern is that if something does happen, if there's a beanball war, if we get into some type of scrum on the field, we're actually downgrading by going with Bautista. Because, you know, Odor knocked him out at second base.
Oh, right. Yeah. I thought maybe the
I have to explain.
I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking as much about Bautista. For some reason, I thought that there was some like complete badass moment in Charlie Culberson's career that I completely missed along the way. But yeah, no, Bautista.
I think Charlie missed it too.
Yeah, Bautista. Yeah, you got to sit him against the Rangers. You don't want him throwing punches against the Rangers.
Yeah, no doubt. So with all of that, that kind of brings up the piggyback question of Ronald Acuña. What does that do with where he is? And, you know, he obviously the Braves kept him down. They couldn't flat out say it, but everybody knows they sent him back down to AAA for a couple of weeks so that they could have future control and have an extra year of control over him. But then he started off slow. So what do you do with him?
I don't know. It's tough. I'm really not sure.
They kind of put themselves in a bind where if they said, oh, he's not, you know, coming out of spring training, he has things to work on. He's not good enough to make the team now, or he's got to do this. You can't very well promote him after 2.5-3 weeks when he's crossed that control threshold, when he's hitting, you know, 150 or 200. So they kind of backed themselves in a corner in that regard. But at the same time, I'll say that I was one of the people who was kind of happy to see him go to AAA and not necessarily for years of control. I mean, that's reason number one.
Right. That's the obvious reason.
But at the same time, you know, he had a 400 BABIP across the season last year. Now, obviously, he's a guy who hits the ball so hard that exit velocity and line drives and things like that are going to be high. He's got great speed. So there's reasons why he has an elevated BABIP. But at the same time, it's very hard for even the best players in the game to maintain a 400 batting average on balls in play across a whole season. There was a good bit of, you know, good fortune that went his way last year. Now, a lot of that, again, is good fortune that he created. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Ronald Acuña was a lucky player. Ronald Acuña is going to probably be a star in this game. But even a star needs some extra work on some things sometimes. And I was kind of happy to see him go down. Again, it gets back to the Dansby Swanson. The guy's never struggled. How does he handle the diversity when he struggles a little bit? So I was glad to see him go down at least a little bit for that regard.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So now, though, we are getting real close, though, to the point where it's almost the point of no return as far as leaving him there until June 3rd, because if nobody knows, June 3rd is the date where if the Braves don't bring up Acuña before June 3rd, then they could prevent him from being a Super 2 player and save themselves, I don't know exactly how much, but some amount in the millions of dollars over the years of 2020 through 2020.
I was just going to say, for a quick primer, Super 2 basically is a player after 3 years earns the right to get arbitration. So after 3 years in the majors or 3 years of service time, they get arbitration where they at least have a little bit of say-so in how much money they make. However, there is a small group of players called Super 2s who actually qualify for 4 years of arbitration. And that group of players, it changes every year, the date does, because it's dependent on which players have been called up and how long they've been up and things like that. But it's usually right around 2.1 years of service time is when a player could qualify for Super 2. If he's in the top, I want to say 17% of players with 2.1 years of service time.
Yeah, something like that.
Basically, all that means is he'll get 4 years of arbitration instead of three. We don't lose any years of control. We just have to start paying him on his terms 1 year earlier. And I've seen a couple of studies. I think it was Fangraphs and maybe Baseball Prospectus have each looked at it. And a Super 2 player tends to earn about $3 million more in salary over his first 6 years than a traditional player, simply because they get to go into negotiations 1 year sooner. So it basically would cost the Braves at least, well, I won't say at least, it would cost the Braves about $3 million more if he were to come up now versus if they were to hold him down until, say, mid-June. That June 3rd date is not a hard and fast date. It's dependent on other players in the league, but that's roughly when it would be.
So I don't know. I don't think – I know there are certainly some Braves fans who would argue for waiting until June 3rd. I personally would not. I think $3 million spread over a four-year span is – not drastic enough. And I think the potential of a playoff game in 2018 is much more valuable.
Enough to call him up. Right. I don't think the Braves, I do believe the Braves would hold him down for a year of control. I don't think they would hold him down for Super 2 status to avoid that if they thought that he could help them win. Now, if the team is out of it and he's not doing anything to help them, you know, wouldn't be doing anything to help them win, maybe they hold him down. But it's unlikely. I don't think they would do that just because the amount of money that they would spend additional for the extra arbitration year is it pales in terms of the amount of money they would earn in additional ticket sales and merchandise sales by having his jersey available to sell right now.
Yeah. So, but so I guess that's the frustrating thing then about his start and the current situation is that, you know, as you get closer to June 3rd, at that point, it makes sense to wait. Like, if he still hasn't, quote unquote, earned a call up by like May 15th, May 20th, at that point, maybe you do wait until June 3rd, because at that point, $3 million, the trade for the extra $3 million that you're going to save is only a week or two. But I think that, I don't know. I think he has more or less earned it. I'm ready to see him.
I agree. I think too that maybe some fans have some way high expectations for him, like they did for Swanson and some others. I mean, you know, there's prospect fatigue and there's prospect hype, and Acuña has been on the front page of every prospect list for the last 18 months. So I think there are some people maybe who don't follow the game as closely who think, you know, Mike Trout is sitting around in the minors and we haven't called him up yet. While I don't think Acuña is going to be that good, he's going to be a very good player, or should be. And as good as Preston Tucker's playing, as well as he's playing, I Acuña is an upgrade. He's a defensive upgrade. He's an offensive upgrade, or likely offensive upgrade. And you don't have to worry about him, you know. Tucker's playing well, but he's playing well because he hits 3-1 home runs every, you know, few days, you know, every 5 days or whatever, that slugging percentage. He's not getting on base. He's actually below average at getting on base, and he basically can't hit left-handers. So I think it's an upgrade to bring up Acuña both offensively and defensively. And we're close enough to the top right now that a game lost now matters just as much as a game lost in August.
And, you know, you talk about upgrading him, and it's not just Acuña and Tucker that are affected by this. It's not just that we don't lose Tucker and add Acuña. We let Acuña start, and then Tucker gets to be a bench player, and he gets to be, you know, he's a guy who comes in and hits home runs off of right-handed pitchers and drives in runs. We need that in the late innings. We need to be able to pick some moments where we can bring him to the plate.
That's why I thought Adonis Garcia was always better off the bench than he was as a starter, because we can pick the times we want to use him. We can pick the matchups and say, hey, Preston, there's a right-handed fastball pitcher up there and we need a pinch hitter. Guess what? You're up. Versus, you know, they can just go ahead. Now, they can switch to another pitcher and whatnot or whatever, but we have better control over when to use him and how to, you know, basically deploy the asset in the most advantageous manner. And so, yeah, not only do we upgrade the outfield that way, but we also upgrade the bench, because now a Charlie Culberson is leaving the bench in place of a Preston Tucker, or Peter Borjos is leaving the bench in place of a Preston Tucker. So there's options there that, you know, it's a waterfall effect. Right. It cascades. So
that's why you always want just like talent. You want as many good players as you can find. And I think Ronald Acuña is a good player. And if he proves us wrong, then you can always send him back down for more, some more seasoning. But I think, I don't know. You know, it's only a week of poor results from Acuna, really, that started his season off so bad. And I think it would be a terrible idea to just really write him off or think he's broken in some way. Not that we are or that any reasonable fan is, but I think I could still say that he has earned his call up to the big leagues, and I'm excited. Hopefully later this week, or I don't know, maybe next, but I want it before May 1st.
I agree.
Okay. Well, anything else in particular you want to talk about or you want to wrap up?
No, just getting our feet back wetness again, and you know, going to be some learning curve to do some stuff here and get it set up the way we want. You can always check us out on the Facebook page. We're usually pretty active there on the Facebook group, Outfield Fly Rule Facebook group, also Outfield Fly Rule Facebook page, also Twitter at OFR Sports on the Twitters. You've got Brent's available on Twitter, Andy Harris, Dylan Short, myself. Everybody's available on Twitter, so come check us out. Also, I'm sure you probably know this already, but we wrote a book. We wrote a 2018 Atlanta Braves preview that previews every player in the Braves organization down from the low, low, low minors all the way up to Freddie Freeman and the boys on the big league squad. It's a paperback book that you can take with you to the stadium, learn everything you need to know about all the players there, players you've seen, scouting reports, stats for the last couple of years. Go check it out on Amazon. It's called the 2018 Atlanta Preview. It is a joint venture with our buddies over there at Walk Off Walk. And you can find that, like I said, at an Amazon near you or on our webpage at outfieldflyrule.com.
It's only $9.99.
I've been told
it's worth at least twice that, but you know, we just like you, the fans.
And not to, I mean, it's no great shakes or anything. It's something that we wanted to do. But we've also had some great input from people in the industry. People that cover the Braves for an actual living have had really good things to say about it. So check it out. Let us know. There's going to be another one coming next year. We're already working on it, and it's going to have far more material in it.
Yeah. Also, subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Although, if you're listening to this, I'm guessing you do. But feel free to go rate us. Give us a rating and on iTunes or wherever you're getting this from. And cause that helps more people discover us. So, so that it gives us reason to do more of these.
There you go.
But yeah, looking forward to next time, and go Braves.
Go Braves. Have a good one.